Well, yeah. All right. Let's see. Next category for the Stump Granny Hall of Fame, the angles that we fondly remember over the course of our wrestling watching history. Go ahead and who won? There are actually quite a few, but, you know, they're all well worth it.
Yeah, there was one automatic bid, and that was Hulk Hogan joining the NWO and that whole formation thing.
Yeah, that may go down, honestly, as the greatest angle in wrestling history.
Yeah, I got to think.
I mean, there are different ways you can look at different angles and give them legitimacy, but and it was always rumored that Hogan, I'm not trying to skip ahead to the conversation about it, but it was always rumored that Hogan may turn, but man, how could you believe it until you saw it?
Yep, yep.
So, okay, so that's a precursor to that discussion.
Okay. Would you like me to list the other ones here?
Yeah, yeah, what else we got? I'll try not to interrupt with my thoughts until we're done here.
One other one got 5 out of 5, and that would be Steve Austin and Vince McMahon feuding with each other in 98. They feuded with each other longer than that, but 98 was the crux of it.
Oh, yeah.
And then the ones that got 4 out of 5, we're talking about Junkyard Dog being blinded.
Classic.
Jerry Lawler, Bret Hart angle from 93. And Boss Man, Big Show, Coffin angle that we already talked about.
Yeah.
And then the other ones here got 3 out of 5. And they are the Ric Flair retirement from 2008. Brian Pillman's masterful multi-promotional work in 96. DX invading WCW. The Mega Powers forming, and then Randy Savage against Jake the Snake from 91.
Oh, God, so good. So very good. I don't know, starting from the top, and I don't know really what more can be said about the Hogan NWO thing. I do have to, for every bad thing I say about the Torch, I do have to give it a little bit of credit here and there. I actually had my copy of Pro Wrestling Torch that suggested Hogan was going to be the third man with me at my friend's house while we were watching the Bash at the Beach that year. And I was like, see, I have it right here, sort of thing. We already passed it around the room. But nonetheless, everyone else in the room had read it. When Hogan turned, the whole room popped. I mean, we were all on our feet like, what the hell?
Right.
It's just memorable.
Yeah.
It's etched in your mind. If you saw it, you know, you'll never forget all the garbage in the ring. You put the picture up and being flanked by Hall and Nash and interviewed by Mean Gene. It's a part of wrestling folklore.
They originally wanted Bret Hart, but when it looked like Bret Hart was going to go back to WWF, they went to Plan B and were trying to put their heads together on who could be that guy from in-house. And no better choice in the world than Hulk Hogan. It was always just a matter of if he wanted to do it. Well, he did it wisely for him because he was getting super stale as a babyface.
He was getting booed out of buildings all over the place in the Southern WCW promotion. They still hadn't really gotten too much further out than, Chicago, honestly.
Yeah.
They may have had, like, an LA show or a few LA shows before that, but they were still a Southern promotion. It was Flair country. It was Horseman country. And so, Hogan was stale, but he was also very disliked.
And he would have been out of the company in a year if he hadn't done something to freshen himself up. So.
Probably, yes. And the sad thing is, like, he had already worked Turner and Bischoff into giving him how many, millions of dollars, plus tens of thousands of dollars per appearance.
His contracts were so ridiculous.
Yeah,
his contract was the beginning of the end for WCW.
Yeah, it really was. It was in the Halls and Nashes. The idea that, no matter who came in, whatever they paid that person, Hall and Nash would, if it was more than what Hall and Nash were getting, Hall and Nash had to get more, that much, plus some, Jesus. But yeah, Hogan.
Who would give a contract like that? I mean, how much intelligence is there?
Yeah,
make
seriously.
A contract like that. It's really ridiculous.
No, and if Hogan hadn't made this turn, he would have ended up crawling back to WWF, tail between his legs. Yep, lucky to make probably a tenth of what his WCW contract was.
Yep. And his career wouldn't have lasted nearly as long either.
Right.
Because the Hogan WWF nostalgia tour might last maybe a year or two. And then what does he do? He's gone.
Yeah. And he can only, you know, with Russo at the helm of WWF at the time and Hogan and McMahon, you know, getting past all the nostalgia shit, there's no way that Hogan would have lasted in the Austin Rock era.
Right.
The way
not a chance.
No. No siree. So, yeah, I mean, classic angle. A million things have been said about it. Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon, yeah, I mean, it really kind of started September of 97 with the Austin and his broken neck, thanks to Owen Hart's pile driver at SummerSlam, that they decided to finally turn into an angle. McMahon comes in the ring and wants to force Austin to sign a waiver that said WWF's not responsible for if anything happens to you in the ring. And Steve Austin made Vince McMahon admit on TV that he was the owner of the company,
gave
him the stunner. And, I mean, we're off and running until, you know, at least, I know it was even longer than WrestleMania 15, which would have been March of 99. But,
right.
I mean, that was supposed to be the culmination, the corporate champion, The Rock, with McMahon in his corner against Steve Austin, the guy who McMahon just absolutely does not want to be the champion of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but 98, I mean, that was, like, the hottest and heaviest part of their feud for sure.
Definitely. And Austin made, what, $8 million that year?
I think so, yeah.
So it was extremely lucrative for him to do that. So.
Yep. Yeah, and for every $8 million that he made, I'm sure WWF made another $100
million. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That was a tremendous year for business.
Oh, God, yeah. Other good memories from that feud, because there were plenty.
Oh, God. McMahon peeing his pants?
Yeah. That might be the most classic thing of all.
Yeah. But every week they tried to do something with it, you know?
Yeah.
And it got old. As like a hardcore fan, it kind of got old after a while. But, I mean, the ratings were through the roof the entire time, and business was booming. So
yeah,
can't really blame them.
Yeah, you can't deny that much success. Yeah, and it could have ended sooner. For the storytelling sake, but it's a good thing that it didn't for the money-making sake.
Yep.
But I think, between the McMahon peeing himself thing, which is just fantastic, it culminated with the cap gun that said Bang 316.
Yep.
You know, even going back to the Austin Tyson thing in 98 with McMahon in the ring, I think it was the pay-per-view the night before the peeing himself incident, when McMahon fired Austin on pay-per-view, screw you, you're fired.
Mm-hmm.
God, there's so much good stuff from that year.
Beer truck?
The beer truck, yep. God, what else? I mean, we can go on and on, seriously.
Yeah,
Survivor Series 98 was brilliant, despite the mistiming of our friend the Big Boss Man.
Oops.
Oops. Yep. Definitely a Hall of Fame worthy angle. This is classic. Junkyard Dog Blinded. This was Mid-South Bill Watts angle.
Yep.
And it involved the fabulous Freebirds, correct?
Indeed.
All right. Talk more about this angle.
Yeah, this was back when in New Orleans where they're getting people jumping the guardrails and pulling knives on the Freebirds and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody pulled a gun on Michael Hayes and told Doug, don't worry, I got him, you know? This is just genuine old school heat for an angle. And, you know, I can't think of any better representation for an old school angle than this one. This is Bill Watts at his peak and JYD is the Hulk Hogan of the Mid-South territory, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the number one draw, absolutely. Number one babyface for that company. And as long as I'm not getting my information mixed up here, I think the beauty of this angle was that it was portrayed as though the Freebirds weren't trying to blind JYD, with this Freebird hair cream stuff. And so, like, the whole, like, culpable deniability thing where they could say it wasn't our fault, we're sorry, it was an accident, and then they could, and then they still look like the biggest assholes in the world for doing it nonetheless.
Yeah, because they weren't exactly sorry for it either, you know?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, there's so much good.
Yeah. And this angle was also duplicated in WWF. Rick Martel blinding Jake the Snake years later.
Yep.
So yep, that's kind of, to me, a sign that it was a success, is when it keeps getting duplicated.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, we talked about Tommy Dreamer and Sandman and their blinding angle. That was an accident, too. Of course, Tommy wasn't, he wasn't turned heel for doing it, but, you know, it's still, it's a blinding angle with, and Paul, of course, in his booking brilliance, took it and gave it his own twist and made it its own phenomenon. So, kind of in the same way, vein as Honky Tonk Man being the standard bearer for the chicken shit champion. This might be like the ultimate angle that, that can be used, borrowed, ripped off, stolen, twisted, turned, and made your own or completely ripped off, but such a good angle. Jerry Lawler versus Bret Hart, WWF 1993.
The beginning of my love affair with Jerry Lawler.
And his ability to talk and talk and talk and talk.
Oh, my God.
Of course, the whole thing was based on, to start with, the fact that Bret Hart won the King of the Ring tournament in 1993, and Jerry Lawler was pissed because somebody else was a pretender to the throne, right?
Yep, because he had been the king for 300 years before then.
And the unified champion 700 times.
Yep. Like Paul Heyman said, I didn't book myself to win my own title 73 times. Or whatever.
God, so funny. And then, yeah, so that turns into Jerry Lawler doing his best imitation of the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah.
And just a nonstop parade of mama jokes.
Yeah. And then the classic SummerSlam angle.
Oh, God, yeah.
This little blue-haired lady!
Buddy's here! He's here! Yep. The whole idea was 2 months after SummerSlam 93, it was supposed to end with a Jerry Lawler versus Bret Hart match, and Lawler comes out on crutches, and this is like an old, the old-schoolest angle ever, too. The heel that comes out with the fucking doctor's note and the note from his mom and everybody else in the world who says that he can't wrestle this match. He comes out on a crutch with a bandaged knee and claims that he saved an orphanage full of children off of a fiery bus.
Right.
And he's replaced by who?
Evil Doink.
Evil Doink, yes.
Who gets
but,
his ass handed to him by Hart.
Masterfully, I might add.
And then an absolute miracle happens. And Lawler can all of a sudden walk again.
Yep.
And then I was a second really looking out for him there.
Yeah, and then a second miracle happened, and Jack Tunney made a good decision.
Yeah. It's all fucking time on the take, Tunney.
Jesus. And then we did get our Bret Hart, the Jerry Lawler match for about 5 minutes before Hart put Lawler in the sharpshooter and wouldn't let go, and would not let go, and would not let go for like 3 minutes.
So let the record show... Mm-hmm. that the result was reversed and Jerry Lawler was the winner.
Yes. And then two things of importance come out of that. One, I wish wrestling angles would have happened like this, in that when somebody puts a hold on you and wants to make it look like they're trying to end your career, don't hold it for like 20 seconds and then let go just in time for the commercial break.
Yeah.
Fucking book it so they hold on to this move for like 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
If it's being done right, the crowd is going to be hot as shit for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is that it allowed this feud to continue for the next 2 years.
And you know what? Hold it through the commercial break.
Sure.
You know?
I would like to see a wrestler go into business for himself and just hold on to a move despite what the script says. And then when they do come back from commercial, he's still in the ring with a fucking armbar on somebody.
I guarantee maybe, you, and get over.
Oh, hell yeah. Maybe that would be a wake-up call for Vince. Well, goddamn, why didn't I think of that?
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just a showcase. It was great, too, because it was like the first national platform and showcase for Jerry Lawler's brilliant microphone work.
Yep.
So, yes, great angle. Good matches, but great angle. Great mic work.
Definitely.
Let's see. What else can we talk about as far as the big Boss Man, Big Show, Coffin angle?
We pretty much covered it. Boss Man
okay.
is the most heinous character ever.
Yes.
Yep.
Big Show's dad died. Boss Man loved it. Wrote a beautiful poem you can look up on YouTube, or it might
yes.
even post along with this audio.
Yes, yes.
And then at the funeral, Big Boss Man knocks out Big Show with, I think, the tombstone, right?
I think so.
Or a cinder block, one or the other. And then ties the Big Show's dad's coffin to his Blue Brothers-style cruiser.
Drives around. With
yep.
Big Show hopping on top of the coffin.
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
Yep. Casket surfing halfway across the cemetery.
Yes.
And then we also find out through intimidation by the Big Boss Man toward Big Show's mother that Big Show is, in fact, a nasty bastard.
Yes.
And his mother said so.
I mean, we might have always had an inkling, but now we knew.
Yeah, really. Okay, we'll probably keep this one short. Ric Flair's retirement angle in 2008.
Yep.
I mean, I put it on my ballot mostly because, A, it was Ric Flair, and, B, because it led to his fantastic retirement match at WrestleMania 24.
Great match. Fucking great angle the day after the retirement ceremony. But,
yep.
I mean, I personally voted no for it because it's fucking back, you know?
Yeah.
And
well,
retirement angles don't mean shit in wrestling.
Right.
I guess that's not his fault, but whatever.
Well, what is his fault is that he's still trying to put a figure four on Mr. Kennedy.
Seriously.
Yeah. So, with the good, you get the bad with this one, but the match at WrestleMania with Shawn Michaels and the night afterwards were worth it completely.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Brian Pillman. works WCW into being let go of his contract, goes to ECW to talk all
yeah.
the shit in the world about everyone who will listen, and then signs a contract with the WWF.
Yep. WCW thought they were releasing him storyline-wise, but Pillman's lawyer's like, no, this is legal.
Yep.
So, goes to ECW. All the while, Bischoff is trying to salvage it. Well, we can turn this into something. You'll just come back in a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Billman's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he shows up on WWF. Brilliant.
So good. So smart.
So smart.
Work all the smart marks, Booker man.
Yep.
What's a smart mark, you ask? Smart mark is somebody who believes OJ didn't do it.
Nice.
A smart mark is someone who spent his last $20 on crack cocaine. And a smart mark is every single one of you pieces of shit. What did he say? Every single one of you motherfucking idiots rolled up into one giant piece of shit.
There we go. That
and
might also be something you'll have to post.
Yeah, oh yeah.
On this one, because everybody needs to see that. It's fucking brilliant.
It was. Yeah, Brian Pillman exercising his constitutional rights in Philadelphia, cutting a promo on everyone.
Yep, yep.
Yep, definitely.
And
okay.
Shane Douglas coming out, and they tried to turn it into Douglas versus Pillman, but Pillman was gone before they could have the match.
Yep.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Win some, lose some. All right. DX invades WCW. D-Generation X, of course, running rampant in the WWF from late 97 with Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and China, and then evolving after Michaels left into Hunter and X-Pac and Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, still with China, and they drive a tank, an army
yeah.
tank, up to WCW headquarters.
Nice. This was in Raw. It was really fun.
Yeah.
And it felt like, you know, on any given week, something fun could happen, and this was a clear shot at WCW, and they were yelling, like, free Hall and Nash, right? So.
Yep. Yeah, Let My People Go.
Yep. So good.
That's right.
So good.
It was. This was, I mean, we were both in high school when this happened. And I realize it was grown men doing this stuff, but this was stuff that we're like, you know, I don't want to speak for us, and really I'm not saying that I would ever want to, you know, to commandeer an army tank and drive it up to my worst enemy's house or something like that, but this is the type of shit that we probably wish we could have done, you know?
Yeah, was, definitely.
Like, I don't really
sort of
want
like
to be...
free spirit kind of thing, this rebellious outlaw sort of thing.
Yeah,
that everybody
exactly.
can relate to.
Exactly. So, yeah, they really, this was the, I like to use the term zeitgeist. Whatever. Fuck the zeitgeist, I think. That's what this was, the Attitude Era for sure.
Yep.
The Mega Powers form, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage come together with the most bionic handshake in wrestling history.
Yes, the handshake heard around the world.
Basically, Hogan had spent plenty of time on top as the world champion. It was time to transition someone else into a top spot and then eventually into a feud with Hogan. Plus, Hogan had to go and tape, or didn't, he was filming No Holds Barred at this time.
Yep.
So they had to take a little time off, and Randy Savage was the heir to the throne.
And the top two guys in the company by far. So it
yeah.
really meant something that they were teaming.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a, you know, just total dynamic duo kind of stuff. And they had the feud with the Twin Towers, and then they feuded with each other. So
yep. And it led to Hogan's
deal.
Yeah. And it led to Hogan's one of Hogan's few good matches, or great matches I should say.
Yeah.
So, you know, good for Hogan for being able to wrestle his style, but good for Savage for being able to adapt to Hogan's style too and still work a great 15-minute match with him.
Right.
And, of course, we got Elizabeth involved and also got her to take her skirt off so we could see her underwear.
Which is always a good thing.
Yeah. It's the, Liz's underwear holds up to this day.
No doubt, dude.
And Randy Savage is back. So is Elizabeth for the last angle on our list here. Randy Savage versus Jake the Snake Roberts in late 1991. Savage had been retired by Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 7. He was a commentator for a few months before being reinstated because of this angle. How did he and Jake the Snake get involved with each other?
Yeah, very cleverly done because they didn't automatically make Savage a total babyface. He was kind of a tweener on commentary and stuff like that. And, yeah, you know, they had been, like, teasing, oh, Savage needs to come back, blah, 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 but the angle with Jake the Snake is what cemented it and turned him total babyface and led him, you know, coming back as a wrestler and everything. And Jake the Snake in 91 is like the total heel, you know. He's another one that I might consider for serious wrestler next year.
Sure, definitely.
But yeah, he attacks Savage and the Snake bites him and the Snake... probably hasn't even been defenemized. And Liz gets shoved down and maybe DDT'd in the process. And
yeah, and then to follow that up with after Savage's reinstatement, he couldn't be reinstated in Survivor Series, and he couldn't be a part of the 8-man tag that was also supposed to feature Sid before he got injured.
Yep.
And then that effectively took Jake Roberts out of the match too. So here's a huge match that they'd been advertising that turned into a 3-on-3 elimination match. So Jake the Snake and Randy Savage will wrestle at the earliest possible date, which will be this Tuesday in Texas.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's really where the most memorable part of the angle was the snake bite because it was on free TV. It was on Superstars. But probably...
and everybody was freaking the fuck out. Made it look real.
Yeah. But probably the most, emotional part of the whole angle was Randy Savage. He won the match at Tuesday in Texas with an elbow drop. He was going to go for another one. The referee tried to stop him. They gave Jake enough time to get up. distract Savage, give him a DDT, give him another DDT, and then Liv gets in the ring and starts begging and pleading with Jake. Well, of course, Jake's like, beg for it, beg for him. And then the best part of all, Jake the Snake slaps Elizabeth, something that we never even saw Randy Savage do.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the promo that he cut afterwards.
Yeah, the beauty part is Jake lost every one-on-one match they had.
Mm-hmm.
But he could always get his heat back after the match by doing something vile and vicious.
Yep.
The sign of a true heel.
Yeah, definitely. Yep, the fact that they could keep the feud going for about 6 months,
right.
Yeah, a testament to Jake Roberts' ability to talk his way into and to continue a feud.
Talk his way and angle his way into keeping the feud hot. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And Liv turned into something that somebody that Jake could cultivate into something even he could tolerate or however.
Yeah, if you can imagine that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Gene Okerlund's just completely fucking disgusted by that comment.
Yeah.
You're sick. So there you go. There's the rundown of the angles in the Stunt Granny Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
The last category, the matches, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Nine matches.
We should probably run through these in about 9 minutes or so.
Sure.
So what do we got here,
Dusty? The automatic bid was Undertaker against Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 25. Just a fucking masterwork.
Yeah, it was. Should we go through these as we talk about, or should we talk about them as we go through them, or do you want to go through the whole list first?
Yeah, we should go through them one at a time,
talk about
it, and then go to the next one.
Okay, sure, yeah. Well, yeah, Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, I've said a million times. As soon as the match was over, I started tearing up. I'm like, because I thought I'll never, ever see another match this good again as long as I live.
Right.
The build-up was
yeah.
what it was, but the best part was that they gave it, from the time that the video package started to promote the match to the time that the video package started for the following match, they gave these guys 1 hour at WrestleMania 25.
That's right.
Unbelievable. And they're worth every fucking second of it.
Absolutely. They did everything in their power to justify that hour.
Yep.
Such a memorable occurrence.
It was.
So,
all right.
Okay, next one.
Yeah.
Brett versus Owen from WrestleMania 10.
Mm-hmm. The match that kicked off the show on pay-per-view and the angle behind it, Bret Hart and Lex Luger had both won the Royal Rumble 94, so they both laid claim to a shot at the title held by Yokozuna. Because of a coin flip, Lex got the first title shot, which meant that Bret had to wrestle somebody else in order to balance out the, you know, who'd wrestled how many times. And he was just really getting started with a feud against his brother Owen, thanks to some shenanigans and tag team matches that didn't quite pan out the way Owen would have liked. And so they kicked off WrestleMania with a great 20-minute technical match. And as great as the match was, probably even better was the finish, the outcome.
Yeah. Kind of a surprise finish. Try to roll through, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
And Owen sat down on it and got the pin?
Yep.
Am I mistaken there, or is that it?
No, that's exactly right. And then, and of course, Brett is shocked.
Yeah. I think everybody was kind of shocked, because up to that point, Owen had only been kind of mid-card fodder.
Yep.
And they'd been teasing the feud for a while, but it was sort of a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure anyone really took him seriously up to that point. And then so this night kind of made Owen.
It did, because what you got is a guy who, like you said, had been kind of toiling in the mid-card, who was good enough to beat the guy who was going to get a title shot later in the night.
Yep.
I mean, he was made in one night.
And the perfect, the natural transition, once Brett wins the title, now Owen can say, hey, I beat that motherfucker.
Yep.
I should be first in line for a title shot. So great booking there as well.
Yeah, yeah, great. I mean, this honestly, this could have been an in-depth in the angles wing, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Great stuff.
All right. What's the next
along.
Two?
Next two are both Ric Flair against Rick Steamboat, one from WrestleWar 89 and one from Chi-Town Rumble in 89. Yeah, they both had to go together or not at all, you know?
Yeah.
They're synonymous with each other.
Now, the Chi-Town Rumble is where Steamboat wins the belt.
Yes.
And WrestleWar is where Ric Flair wins it back.
Flair wins it back and then transitions to Terry Funk.
Yep.
Which
and
is
it's
also
been said,
a great match.
Oh, yeah. That's a great match, too. Yeah, Great American Bash 89. It's been said that Flair Steamboat, I mean, people have said that they love the three match series between these two, but the WrestleWar match is their favorite of the three.
Right.
Like a brilliant
you
half-hour match.
You was the least favorite, am I right?
My least favorite was the 55-minute
two
out of three falls match from The Clash. I thought it was just a little long. And the double pin just pissed me off.
Yeah, they did that a lot in WCW. I hate that finish.
Yep.
That was a classic dusty finish, and I hated it.
Yep. There are ways that it could have been better. It could have been shorter, and it would have been better.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people love it, and it's going to go down in history. But, yeah, these two, I think, are better.
These two are clearly a step better. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Cool. The next one on the list here is a personal favorite of mine.
Yeah, one that you advocated for, and it definitely deserves it. We're talking about Cactus Jack and Big Van Vader from Halloween Havoc 93.
Yep. The beauty of this match is that it was, well, two things. It was a spin-the-wheel, make-the-deal match, and it was a Texas Death match. And to the best of my knowledge, it was the first Texas Death match on pay-per-view, which is awesome for me because, as a Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine reader, you hear about all these types of matches, and then you finally get to see one happen.
Yep.
But it was so different from what WCW was doing at the time. I mean, they had put a whole bunch of money into these goofy videos to promote things like Sting versus Jake Roberts, and Sting and Davey Boy Smith versus Sid and Vader, and a boat gets blown up because kids are playing volleyball on the beach. And
the fucking evil midget blowing up the boat and just stupid stuff.
It really was. There was a lot of and at the same time, WCW was also pushing good wrestling or great wrestling sometimes. Rick Rude and Arn Anderson. Ric Flair had just come back, was wrestling Rick Rude. Barry Windham was doing his thing. Too Cold Scorpio.
Yep.
Wrestlers like that. But then Vader is just like the mauling, kick-ass, grizzly bear WCW world champion.
Yeah.
And Cactus
and
Jack
this time, he is legitimately scary as fuck.
Yeah, and he's probably, I don't know, man, he's probably a top five worker at that point.
Sure.
Like, worldwide,
absolutely.
I would say. Because he was believable. I mean, he knew how to work a match, and he was fucking believable when he did it.
Yep.
And then Cactus, I mean, everyone was, I guess I shouldn't say blowing smoke, because it was true. Cactus was one of the top workers in the U.S. at the time, to be honest.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He did good things. He did cool things. He did innovative things. He had great timing. He had great instinct. And these two just had a hardcore brawl all over the arena. I think it was in New Orleans.
And they were killing each other.
Yeah. Blood and guts and Vader falling on top of Cactus with all 400 pounds on his rib cage. And I just, everything about it. There's everything about this match. Just, I fucking loved it. It was so different from everything I've seen at that point.
Mm-hmm. A tremendous old-school-style hardcore brawl.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The kind of match I want to see a lot more of. I really do.
If we could find the right people to do it, I would advocate for that, too.
God, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Speaking of
all
blood.
All right, next one is Bret Hart again versus Steve Austin this time, WrestleMania 13.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the beauty of this match being the double turn.
Yep, the double turn at the end. This one could also go into the angles file.
Yeah.
Because of the double turn at the end where Austin is the courageous fighter and Bret Hart is the whiny little crybaby. And they turned them both at the same time, and Austin's face bleeding was on the introduction for years after that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those iconic things you associate with WWF.
Yep.
And will for all time. Yeah,
this
the angle
kind of the introduction to the more hardcore style.
yes.
that WWF would employ.
Yep, and sort of the more cerebral storyline, too. The idea that you have a baby face that's, you know, he's trying to act heroic, but the fans aren't buying it anymore. And he's being called out by the heel that everybody loves because he's the type of person that everybody wanted to be.
Yep.
Yep, so, and then, of course, two also world-class workers at the time that already had their match at Survivor Series 96, and it was a great 30-minute match. Great, but, I mean, it pretty much stayed in the ring the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
This was the kind of the evolution of that match. It was good technical wrestling when it had to be, good brawling outside the ring. It was a submissions match, so, I mean, they could let loose even more so.
The one critique I would have is that Austin never pinned Bret clean.
Yeah, never in their feud.
Yeah, and that really kind of pissed me off. But as a standalone, all their matches were great, and this one was the best.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, the next two we can kind of talk about together because they include one person, kind of an unlikely person.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Warrior, who you might not think about when it comes to work rate automatically, but his match against Randy Savage at WrestleMania 7 and his match against Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 6, both classics, I would say.
Oh, me too. It took Warrior 2 years to be a good enough worker to follow direction by Pat Patterson and to be led around the ring by Hulk Hogan and Earl Hebner. So, you know, props to Warrior for that, even though it took a couple of years. And then it took another year of being, you know, counted on as being the champion and another short feud with Rick Rude, and he fought Ted DiBiase and other people like that to have a tremendous match with Randy Savage at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And they're both long matches, too. They're about 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
So that helped.
You can't, much longer than the usual match that he would have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, at some point, you know, whether you're Austin, or not Austin, Jesus Christ, Goldberg, or, you see how I confuse those two, or the Ultimate Warrior, or another person that you're pushing as a monster like that, at some point you have to have a match with some drama, and you can't have a dramatic match in a minute and 45 seconds.
Right, absolutely.
So, yeah, and the Hogan thing, the Hogan match was great because, you know, two of our childhood icons finally facing off in a babyface match.
Definitely. The kind of which that was really unheard of at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Good guys don't face each other. That just doesn't happen.
No. In fact, WWF had gone so long trying to avoid those matches. You know, they knew they'd have a new drawing card on their roster coming up. And, you know, if it was like a Pedro Morales or something like that, you couldn't just have Bruno lose the belt to Pedro Morales. You had to have a transitional champion. Same with Bob Backlund to Hulk Hogan. You had to have somebody transition. Which, by the way, if I've never said this on an audio, I'm way overdue. I cannot stand the misuse of the word transitional champion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, or January of 06, John Cena has the belt. Edge wins it for a couple of weeks. Hold it for a couple of weeks, then loses it back to John Cena.
Right.
They weren't transitioning from John Cena to John Cena.
No.
So you can't refer to him as a transitional
champion. They were switching the belt.
Yeah, they just switched it just for, you know, the sake of an angle or to put somebody over or to put a little drama or a little vulnerability on somebody else. He wasn't transitioning from one person to another.
No.
So it's poor, poor use of that term.
Transition means Iron Sheik in 84...
Mm-hmm.
Or Bob Backlund in 94.
Yep.
That's
exactly
what transition means.
Exactly. So now that we got that settled,
yeah.
That was another beautiful thing about the Hogan Warrior match was there was no one transitioning there. God, I'm glad they didn't do anything like cop out, you know, and have somebody else. I don't know that that was ever in the plans. I'm sure it wasn't. I know Zeus at one point, the original plan for WrestleMania 6 that I know of was Hulk Hogan versus Zeus in the main event.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So if anybody else,
I'm so glad those plans got changed.
Oh God! If anybody else,
it could have been anything other than that, you know.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. If anybody complains that Warrior made it into our Hall of Fame in any way, first of all, you don't get Stunt Granny, and second of all, think it could have been Zeus, who might actually go into the fun category next year.
Maybe. Because he will destroy you.
You
Greek barber.
Christ.
All right, one more here in the match category. The barely legal Japanese six-man tag team match.
Yes.
Great Sasuke, Gran Hamada, and Masato Yakushichi versus Taka Michinoku, Terry Boy, and Dick Togo.
Yes. Great job by Bob Ortiz.
Yeah, Bob Ortiz is the shit, man.
Yes, he was. Now, this was a lot of people's probably introduction to the six-man tag team match that's kind of standard definitely in Lucha Libre, also in Japanese wrestling, which I think mostly because of the influence of Lucha Libre on Michinoku Pro, the company itself. Because really, I mean, Japanese wrestling has a lot of tag team matches, but they're not really known for their six-man tags. So what you get here is a great match with five great workers and Yakushichi, who couldn't stay on his feet to do a backflip, but still pulled off a couple of decent moves.
Right. He didn't stand out in any sort of way. So.
Yeah, other than the Power Ranger outfit, which, by the way, even though I know Dan was saying, you know, you can only rag on ECW fans for so much, for so long.
Right.
1,100 people chanting Power Ranger at a guy who can't understand English.
Right. You know, here, I was thinking about that because I saw that match recently. Uh-huh. He didn't look so much like the Power Ranger to me. He looked like from fucking Zelda.
Oh, like, yeah.
He looked more like Link to me.
Good call, yeah, with that little green outfit that kind of did the, I don't know, like the Roman Empire gladiator thing, like down around the waist area. I don't know if I'm explaining myself right. But yeah, he didn't look like a fucking great Sasuke. Looked more like a Power Ranger than Yakushichi did.
Thank you. But the Philadelphia Mongoloids, whatever.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, this is one of those matches that started in first gear and they shifted all the way up to fifth by the end of the match.
Yep.
The Blue World Order got over his heels.
Man, they were like the most over thing on the show almost.
Yeah, no, they really were. They really seriously were. Well, like Dan said, I'm pretty sure as Dan said in his barely legal review on the Torch back then, or maybe it was, actually I think it was Powell, said something about, you know, no other company could bring in six guys and have them get over like this in one match.
Yeah, that was Powell. And
that was Powell.
Totally true.
Yep.
Any other company, here's these six new guys, and everybody'd be like, well, we're going to see if they still have some popcorn, you know?
Yeah. No, this was good timing for and a great company and the perfect pay-per-view, the perfect event for a great match like this. Really ushered in this era, which continues to this day, you know, Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate. Well, more Ring of Honor, I guess, puts on the Japanese six-man tags, usually at WrestleMania weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all the better for it, for seeing it.
Yes, definitely.
Cool. Well, excellent.
That sums up the first annual Hall of Fame inductees.
It does, and hey, we even offered a sneak peek at some of the people who might make it in next year.
Yes, we did. Tease the people. Even one more.
That's right. Hey, this is our own slow burn. Maybe I should nominate this as an angle for next year. The one-year angle. Who did we tease this year that's actually going to make it into the Hall of Fame next year?
In every couple audios, I'm going to drop hints. You never know.
That's right. It was kind of like the time that Zeus kicked Hulk Hogan while he was standing in front of the cage and said, "Move me!"
What is that, in case he gets lost or something? Give me a break.
I don't care if you got a V shaved in the side of your head or not. That's not legal.
That's the best commentary ever.
Yeah, it was. God almighty. Well, friend, on that note, I think that I'm about ready to sign off and go bask in the glory of the Stunt Granny Hall of Fame, the Akeem Stunt Granny Hall of Fame.
Nice.
So I'm going
to. This was a much better way to spend our time than watching the wrestling show, the quote-unquote wrestling show that's going on right now as we do this.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure somebody's neighbor probably ordered it.
Yeah, they did. Yep.
Oh, okay, well, I'll worry about it then. But until then, I'm gonna call it a night. And Dusty, if you'd like to do the same, please do.
All right, it's been a night. And it's been a night of Stunt Granny Hall of Fame action and excitement. And for Eric Nelson, my name is Dusty Giebing, and we're going to try to do better next year.